supreme power of God, the Swarup Shakti, or the intrinsic, internal, complete spiritual power of God. And she is the embodiment of God's love. God is love. So that love that's in him, that makes him God, comes out of his body in the form of Radha. So, as you know, in this world, in this reflected world, the highest excitement is in paramour love. You're married to somebody, but you love another, and you secretly go out to meet him. Why is this concept here in this world? Because it began in the real world. But Radharani is not really married to anyone else. She's really the supreme power of Krishna. But in order to experience that highest form of love, where no risk is too great for the parties to meet, there has to be some arrangement. So there's an arrangement by Krishna's desire potency called Yoga Maya to make Krishna and Radha and their other gopi friends think that she's married to another man. But that other man is just Krishna's shadow. No one else but Krishna's shadow. And the other gopis are also married to shadows of Krishna in different forms. So Radha and the other young married girls of Vrindavan are sitting at home, and in a choked voice, they're speaking about the fortune of all the forest residents who get to see Krishna all the time. But they, who have so many rules and regulations of Vedic household life, never get to see him. Of course, they're always with him, but that is the nature of spiritual love. Material love, let's say we love a newspaper, and one day we get the newspaper, and then we hold that newspaper tight to our chest as we're walking home from work, and we read it a little bit, and the next day it's in the garbage because it's old news. Similarly, a girl and boy stealthily get together. They have no allowance to meet, but they're meeting in secret. And that secret meeting, partly only because it's secret, is so thrilling. And they speak together about sweet nothings and are very enamored by each other's association. Then they get married, and now they have a free pass to meet. And everybody's happy they meet, but now they're bored. And they want to go back to those days when, just like, I don't know if you've ever heard of a Vaitasi tree. A Vaitasi tree is a thorn tree. In India they have it. And suppose there's a cyclone, a big hurricane and cyclone. And you must have read in the papers sometimes when whole houses, whole villages are destroyed by a cyclone. Trees are blown over very easily like sticks. But the Vaitasi tree, although it's a thorn tree, you think it would have so many disqualifications. But in that cyclone, it doesn't break. It just bends back and forth with the wind, and it remains. So the wife may be thinking to the husband, or saying to the husband, I wish we could go back into the forest of Vaitasi trees, where we our love was unbreakable, unshakable, and every moment was a glorious new experience. But because she knows that that can never be, you can't unmarry, then there's a deep, very deep grief there. So this paramour love of the gopis and Krishna is unending and ever fresh at every moment. So they're at home regretting that they have these rules and regulations of Vedic family life and chastity to the husband and abuse of society if they were to be found out. So they're sitting together and lamenting. And in their lamentation, they're so absorbed in the topic of their conversation, that is Krishna, that they forget who they are and where they are. And they just become completely absorbed in Krishna's description. And they sing this. Baraha bitam natavaravapu karnayo karnikaram bibratavasa kanaka kapisam barjayantim shamalam randrana venuradurasudaya apurayana gopavindai rindaranyam saparalamanam pravashadagita kirti. In their heart of hearts, with their eyes of transcendental emotion, by thinking of Krishna out in the forest, they get a vision of him that's not imagination, but he, with his friends and cows in the forest, actually manifest in his heart, in their hearts. And they're describing in this song that Badaharvatam Natavara Vapu, Natavara, he's the best of dancers. In fact, he can't be compared with any best dancer. Some of you may have heard of Lord Shiva, Nataraj, who at the time of dissolution of the universe dances for 36,000 years. And during his very beautiful dance, there's 36,000 years of flood and 36,000 years of fire. And the whole universe is destroyed, universe is, and then again created. And this goes on again and again, creation and annihilation. But Krishna is Natavara. He can't be compared with any dancer because he is the embodiment of dance. He invented dancing. Not only he dances, but his earrings dance, his garlands dance, his cloth dances. Everything about him is the best of dancers. And on his head, he has a beautiful bun on the side because that's very debonair. And around his... Oh, what do you call that? It's not a bun. It's a top knot. He has an array of peacock feathers. And the peacock feathers, you know, they look like a rainbow. So he looks like a rainbow on top of a monsoon cloud. Because Krishna is the color of a fresh rain cloud. Or sometimes he's described as the color of the sky. In the first years that I knew my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, one day he called me into his room and showed me that there was a picture, P-I-T-C-H-E-R, picture on his floor, and there was a glow on it. He said, "You see that glow? That glow is reflected from the wall outside the window, which is reflected from the sun. But the sun isn't the source of that glow. The sun is also reflecting its glow from someplace else. That is, the diameter of the universe is 4.5 billion miles. Beyond the hole that we see, the outer space, there's a layer of earth. This is described in the ancient Vedas. A layer of earth is 10 times the thickness of the diameter. Then 10 times the thickness of the earth is a layer of water. 10 times that is a layer of fire. 10 times that air. 10 times that ether. 10 times that, then it gets subtle, mind. Then 10 times that, mind, intelligence, and then false ego. So beyond all those layers, there's the spiritual outer space called the Brahma Jyoti. And it's the Brahma Jyoti's light that's reflecting through all those layers into the outer space of this universe and giving the sun its light. And where does the light of the Brahma Jyoti come from? It comes from, there are many, many spiritual planets called Vaikuntha planets, each of which is beyond length and width and depth, unlimited in length and width, and where there's no anxiety. Vai means no, and Kunta means anxiety. There's no anxiety there. no birth, old age, no disease, and no death. So the highest of all these spiritual planets is called Goloka Vrindavan, and that's where the original form of God lives, Krishna, along with his blissful, all-knowing, and eternal associates. So the light from that spiritual atmosphere, which is reflected onto the sun, is coming from Krishna's body. So then our Prabhupada said, if people, when they're in the hot house or some hot factory, and they come out towards the evening in the sky, in the blue sky, and it's so refreshing. So Prabhupada said, imagine how refreshing it is then when someone sees that blue monsoon cloud-like Krishna, who's so brilliant that he's the source of the light of millions of suns, even though emanating through or penetrating through all those layers. So the gopis now have taken that Krishna in their heart. Gopis means Radha, Krishna's supreme power, who by the influence of her expansion, Yogamaya, Krishna's desire potency, she forgets that she's his power, and she thinks, I'm secretly meeting with Krishna. So she and her friends, who are actually her expansions, are sitting at home and thinking of Krishna in this form. And they're singing how beautiful he is, that he wears a garland down to his knees, and he's surrounded by his coward boyfriends, and they're all singing his glories. Is this working, Miss Santi?
Yeah.
It is? Yeah. They're all singing his glories. And he has a flute, as you notice. And he puts his lotus-like fingertips on the holes of his flutes. And the nectar that's in his heart, that's coming from the gopi's love, comes out through his lips and into those holes and plays a very enchanting melody that enchants all fortunate living entities within the universe. So the gopis are having this vision in their hearts, and they're talking about all the forest animals, how lucky they are. For example, they're talking about the cows. You can see the cows. These cows are not ordinary cows in the spiritual world, but they give an unlimited supply of nectar-like milk. And they're called Kamadhenu cows. That means that their milk fulfills all desires, even more desires than we can imagine having, because our desires are very limited here. And you'll notice that the cows have grass, long grasses, hanging from their mouths. They're neither swallowing the grass, nor are they dropping the grass, but they're in such trance, hearing Krishna's flute, that they're mesmerized, and they can neither chew, nor swallow, nor drop. And this is the song about the cows. Gavascha Krishna Mukha Nirgata Venu Gita Piyusha Muda Bita Karnu Putai Pibantya Savasnuta Stanapaya Kavalaksmatastor Govindamatmanidrasashukalashvishantya. This is describing how the cow's ears, you can see the ears are up. That's because these ears have become like cups, and the cups are drinking the nectar of Krishna's flute. In fact, our Gurudev, Srila Narayan Maharaj, has said that if a disciple wants to have his self-realized guru, who's actually out there in the forest with Krishna and the gopis, experiencing unlimited bliss, unlimited knowledge, and eternal life, if he wants that revealed in his own heart, and if he wants to actually enter that, along with his guru, then he has to be like a flute, a hollow flute, so that the guru, who is the mouthpiece of God himself, can breathe his own breath into that flute, and then we become one with the heart of that self-realized guru. So the cow's ears have become like cups, and those cups are drinking the nectar of the flute music, and it's entering into their hearts. That nectar is entering their hearts that they're drinking through their ears, and thus they can embrace Krishna in their heart of hearts. Now, I don't know if you noticed, but can you see that there's some calf also? Little baby calf? And there's some milk dribbling out of the mouth of that calf there. That's because the calves also have become stunned by hearing the nectar of Krishna's flute. So the milk that they've just drunk from the udder of their mothers is neither being swallowed by them nor dropped. It's just hanging there. And they also forget who they are and where they are. And they become one with Krishna's flute music. Then the gopis are also glorifying the rivers there, even the rivers. Everything in the spiritual world has life. Here, in this material world, I was once at the beach with our Gurudev, Srila Prabhupada. And we were sitting on the beach on a blanket, and there were some surfers. Surfers with those black
wetsuits,
those black plastic wetsuits, and they were surfing. And Prabhupada said, they're enjoying themselves, but at any moment a big wave can come, and then they're finished. Because the water here is made of matter, and matter is like, you know, sweet rice or any very, you know, fantastic, tasteful preparation, like sweet rice. But if that sweet rice has sand in it, then you can't taste it. So this material world and everything about it, including the ocean, or surfing in the ocean, is just like sweet rice mixed with sand. So the material world has some pleasure because it's like a muddy reflection of the world of God, but it can't be tasted, or it's tasted as sweet rice mixed with sand.
Frustrating.
Huh? It's frustrating.
Frustrating.
Frustrating, like Prabhupada gives the example of a mirror. And in the mirror, there's a pizza. And you want the pizza, and then you go for it in the mirror, but you just hit the glass. But you want it even more now, so then you hit the glass even harder. And then finally you just break through the glass and you're all bloody. So the material world is frustrating by its constitution. But the spiritual world is full of bliss, full of knowledge and eternal life, because that's the reality, according to the revealed scriptures. And when you meet a spiritual master who's a self-realized soul, you can actually feel the reality of the spiritual world that is real by his presence, because he carries it with him. So, just a little intermission, commercial. He's going to be here.
June 12th.
On June 12th. He'll be in San Diego on June 10th, which is a little bit far away.
It's coming Friday.
June 9th he comes. He flies into LAX.
Yeah.
And then, and here's the dates. And we'll give you all these. And on June 12th he's going to be in LA, which is just a couple of hours from here. And it's so rare to meet such a rare soul that it's compared with a turtle, or anybody swimming in the, or lost in the currents of a river. And it just so happens that there's a raft in the river, and it just so happens that there's a hole in the middle of the raft, and it just so happens that that turtle sticks its head up in the middle of the raft in the hole. That's how rare meeting such a pure devotee is. But that opportunity is there on June 12th. And the address is there, and we can show you it later.
Venice Beach.
A week from tomorrow.
On Venice Beach.
No, 2 weeks.
Huh?
2 weeks from Sunday.
On the beach?
It's not on the beach. It's near the beach. Near Venice Beach. It's on Rose Avenue. Near Venice Beach.
I know Rose. Is it in a building?
Yeah, Rose
is an old church. It's an old church.
It's across from that Rose Cafe. You know where the old cafe?
Yeah.
Right
there.
That's from the church.
It's a church building.
No.
So then the gopis are glorifying the river. And they're saying, you think those rivers are inanimate, but actually, can't you see that the waves of the river are just like hands? Can you see that on that picture?
Mm-hmm.
The waves of the rivers are like hands. And the hands of the waves are offering lotus flowers to Krishna.
Oh, yeah.
And then the water also shoots up and wraps itself around the lotus feet in Krishna. Because at the bottom of Krishna's lotus feet is a treasure chest of unlimited knowledge, bliss, and eternal existence. So the rivers in the spiritual world are conscious. The rivers or lakes or oceans here are not conscious, but those rivers are conscious. And the lotus flowers are also conscious. Everything is full of consciousness. Everything is full of knowledge. And everything is emanating unlimited, unfathomable bliss. So then the gopis are glorifying the clouds, which you can't see here because they're above the trees. But they're saying that the clouds, even the clouds, are so fortunate because the clouds are the same color as Krishna, kind of like bluish. And the clouds have become white because it's like a person who's in ecstasy experiencing eight varieties of ecstatic spiritual emotions, like hair standing on end and tears pouring from the eyes, which the pure devotee experiences all these symptoms. And one of them is the pallidness of the complexion because he's stunned in ecstasy. So they're attributing that to the clouds. And the clouds are raining down just a slight mist on Krishna to cool him off from the heat. And they act just like an umbrella of this mist. So as the gopis are glorifying all the different residences, they begin to enter into their own song. And that's the whole idea of singing these beautiful songs that you were experiencing for about a half hour or so. The songs are like doorways or entranceways into the spiritual world because they're about the spiritual world and they're prayers for entrance into it. And because these songs are written by pure devotees, they have the power to attract the Supreme Lord, and then the Lord makes it happen that the singer who's singing with great devotion actually enters into the words of the song and comes out the other side. So you can see here that the gopis, who were in their homes, and in one sense they still are in their homes, but because of their full absorption in the their own descriptions of what's going on in the forest, they've actually entered the forest themselves in reality. That is, Krishna and the forest entered their hearts, and their hearts and souls entered the forest. And now they're actually there sharing sidelong glances with Krishna. And then there's a verse that describes their being there. Akshambhatam palamidam naparam vidama sakya pashunanuniveshaya torvayasyai Vaktram Vrajesha Sutayor Anuvenu Justam Yarvanipita Manuraksha Kataksha Moksham. That is, for those, anybody who has eyes, the success of those eyes is when they see Krishna and Radha, Krishna's supreme pleasure potency. Radha is also called the Hladini Shakti, or the pleasure energy of God. When we chant Hare Krishna, Hare means Radha, she who steals the mind and heart of Krishna. And she is his pleasure energy. It's by her, her arrangement, her serving him by giving him that power that belongs to him, that he is so full of bliss that he gives bliss to all of his devotees, and that he gives bliss, he engages in blissful activities, and he's made of bliss. All this is caused by her, Srimati Radhika. And I think that's Radha on your shirt, in the front there. She only has two eyes, but the other eye is actually her kumkum, a design, and her forehead. So Radharani and her friends actually enter there, and then from their song, one who has eyes, the perfection of those eyes is to see Radha and Krishna, the Supreme Absolute Truth, and his counterpart, his consort, his transcendental potency, Radha, as they are surrounded by the cowherd boys and cows, and as they lovingly glance at each other with sidelong glances. To actually be there and see that scene is the perfection of one's eyes, to see Supreme Powerful and the Supreme Power. So what's happening exactly in this picture is that because Radha and the gopis manifested there, the boys in front, the very, very front one, his name is Balaram. That's Krishna's older brother. And the others are around Balaram, are other of Krishna's older cowherd boyfriends. And the boys in the back are cowherd boyfriends that are the same age as Krishna. So in the Vedic culture, the ancient Indian culture, the older brother is regarded something like the well-wisher, or a little bit, they have a little bit of a parental mood. So the elders generally are not present when the husband and wife associate with each other. So especially Radha and Krishna, who are not married from the pastime point of view. So Balaram is going ahead so that they can meet freely. But as you can see, Balaram's eyes are looking back, so you know that he knows why he's going ahead. And the boys in the back are all, you can see their arms are up. This is all coming from Srila Narayan Maharaj, as he was explaining to me what elements to put in the painting. They're all calling out, Krishna, look at us, look what we're doing. That way that Krishna would slow up. So they're behind, the elderly cowherd boys went ahead. So now Krishna has a lot of space between, and therefore he's able to share stealthy glances with Radharani and the other gopis. Now, you can see that gopi wearing pink, she's holding a flower basket. Sometimes Radharani and the gopis, knowing that Krishna is going to be somewhere, they just happen to go there with the excuse of picking flowers. So that's why she's holding the flower basket. Or Radharani and the gopis are going somewhere, and Krishna knows it, because you see all those birds in the trees? Those birds are the parrots up there. They're not actually birds like the birds of this world, but they're all great sages. And the branches of the tree are not actually branches of an ordinary tree, but all those trees are desire trees. All desires are fulfilled by those trees. And the branches of the trees are the branches of Vedic wisdom, of ancient scriptures. And all those trees are sitting on the branches of the most deep and confidential of the scriptures, like Srimad Bhagavatam, where the amorous pastimes of Krishna and his associates are described. So those birds will come and either tell Radharani, or they'll come and tell Krishna that Radha is out in the forest here now, or they'll come and tell Radharani that Krishna is out in the forest here now. And so the other party will also go there with some excuse. Now you notice that the gopi in the pink dress, who's carrying the basket of flowers, her fingers are coming across the other side of Radharani's waist. Can you see that? It's not one of those things you see at first glance. So there, the reason she's doing that is because whenever Radharani sees Krishna, she falls into such ecstasies that she starts swaying back and forth, and she has a very, very slender waist. So sometimes in her movements of ecstatic trance, where she's sometimes falling on the ground or looking like she's toppling over, because she loses all of her composure. So her associates think that her slender waist is going to break. So they hold it, to hold it together. And they also decorate her waist and hips with a very beautiful flower belt and tinkling jewels with tassels, very beautiful flower tassels, because their mood is that they should protect Radharani when she's falling this way and that way. So the her assistant maidservants are always rendering very intimate services like that. And you can see the deer there. There's a golden deer, and behind the golden deer, there's a black deer. The golden deer is the wife, and the black deer, called the Krishnasara, is the husband deer. And the gopis sing a verse about that deer, thinking that the deer, that they're thinking everybody is more fortunate than them. They're lamenting that they don't have the association of Krishna. So gradually, when one puts more and more energy into Krishna consciousness, he starts lamenting, but that lamentation is a form of happiness, great happiness, that's not experienced anywhere in the material world. A lamentation that, oh, now I'm separated from my Lord. I'm separated from my life because God is our life. We think that this body is our life, but if we actually analyze it and we see through the eye of scriptures and really common sense, we can see that these bodies are not our life. Because what is this body? In the Bible it says, dust thou wert, dust thou beest. Right now, we love our family and friends. And then, when they leave their body, then we don't want to look at them anymore. They start getting grotesque looking. And then we put them underground. And then, if we were to take them up, after some years, we'd find that the whole thing became dust. Because that's all the body is. And when the dust is covering the soul, it starts taking the shape of the consciousness of the soul, and it starts looking like it has form and like it has life. But actually, it's just matter. made of skin, bones, pus, blood, urine. That's all the body is. One time I was at a college engagement in Boston University with our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, in about 1969, before most of you were born. And he was giving a class at one of the Boston universities. Maybe it was Boston University. And he was telling the students, this body, which you are soaking so nicely, turns into three things when you leave it, when you die. It turns in, depending on your religion. If you're a Christian, then it gets buried and it turns into worms, because the worms come out of the body that is just molding and becoming like dust. And if you're a Parsi, what they do is they just throw the bodies in the streets and then it's eaten by dogs and then it comes out as the stool of the dog. And if you're a Hindu, they burn the body and then it becomes ashes. So he said, this beautiful body which you are soaping so nicely will become three things: stools, worms, or ashes. But the Lord's body is Sachidananda Vigraha. It's made of eternity, full knowledge, and full bliss, and full perfection of form. And our real spiritual bodies are also like that. So the more we come to Krishna consciousness, singing the songs, eating the spiritual food called prasadam, which you'll be experiencing shortly, singing, hearing the glories of Krishna, something starts happening in the heart where you start feeling separation from him. Well, just like Srila Prabhupada gave the example that when you first hear the Hare Krishna mantra, suppose you've never heard it before, then you start thinking, oh, that sound, it is coming again. And it becomes like a person who has amnesia. And then he's reminded of something from the past, and then his memory starts coming back. So love of God and God himself are situated deep within our heart. And it's dormant in our heart. It's nothing that comes from outside. It's already dormant as a seed in the heart. And it becomes awakened by meeting a bona fide spiritual master, taking that shelter, and under his guidance, hearing and chanting about the glories of the Lord. Then some separation, deep separation and yearning for that relationship comes about. And that yearning stands on the heads of all the happiness in this material world. So the gopis are the perfect embodiments of pure devotees. So they're at their home yearning to be with the Lord, so much so that they actually manifest there with him. And they sing, Danyaksma mudagatayo piharinyametat yanandanandana upata vichitra vesam akarna venuranitam sahakrishna saram pujam dadur virachitam pranayavalokai. They say, how fortunate are these deer. Now the deer are, they have no discrimination because they're just dumb deer. But they're saying, we should have been born, it would have been much better if we had been born as deer. Because these deer don't have to, they don't have the heavy weight of discrimination. Oh, I'm married, I can't go. Oh, I'm married, society will abuse me. I'll be the laughing stock. I have to be chaste to my wife, my husband. They just go. They're considered dumb animals, but actually they're much more fortunate and much more intelligent. So they go, and when we want to go, our husbands stand there with sticks, ready to beat us if we go. So we're kept at home. and our in-laws chastise us. But these deer are so fortunate that they run, and they just run right up to Krishna with their large, love-laden eyes and just stare at the Lord. And he also glances back at them with his sidelong glances. And what do their husbands do? They think, oh, our wives are so much more fortunate than us. And they run right behind their wives. Just like Brijesh Prabhu, he met Krishna Bhamani before he was a devotee. And he thought, oh, she's so much more fortunate than I. And so he followed her to her Gurudev and to her God. So the gopis are lamenting that these deer are truly blessed and we're so unfortunate. Actually, the gopis are the most fortunate because they're with Krishna 24 hours a day. But that's the nature of love in the spiritual world. There's never any separation, but so that the meeting always remains fresh and new, there's always feeling of separation. So even though they're with Krishna, because Krishna's in their heart and they're riding on the chariot of his heart as well, they're always lamenting and thinking of other residents of the forest that they consider more fortunate as them. And because of that thinking, they actually enter into that very place where Krishna is. So I think that covers most of the details of the painting. There's one in the back, though. You can hardly see it, but it's in the back, right, our left-hand side. It starts getting a little darker. You see the blue, bluish-green forest. Starts getting darker. That's because there's a mountain there. And that mountain is called Govardhan Hill. And that's the mountain that Krishna performs unlimited pastimes on. And I once asked our Gurudev, Srila Narayan Maharaj, how is it, I mean, God could have done anything. How is it that he invented his life in such a way that so many millions and billions of his pastimes takes place on a very high hill? Isn't it difficult to run up and down the hill for all of his pastimes, which are full of kunjas, that is, forest bowers and caves to play in? But these aren't ordinary caves. These are caves with natural mirrors made of, like here you have to make a mirror, but those mirrors are made of jewels that are naturally in that cave, and the jewels all shimmer and shine and reflect. And there are even trees and flowers and fruits in those caves naturally growing there. So I asked Gurudev about that. Why would God want to, you know, have his pastimes on a big hill? So he said, oh, it's no problem for him. He could take one step and be on the top of it. In other words, he doesn't feel the hilliness, unless it's part of the pastime to enjoy running down the hill. So they sing about this hill, and then they regret that we were born in the family of cowherd girls. It would have been better if we had been born as little stones on Govardhan Hill, because Krishna is always playing on that hill, and he's always rolling on the hill with his coward boyfriends, and the dust, the pollen of his lotus feet are always impressing their markings. He has different auspicious markings on his feet of a thunderbolt, lotus flower, rod for driving elephants, many, many auspicious symbols. And those symbols impress themselves on the ground of that hill. So they're singing. Hantaya Marjirabala Haridasa Varja Yad Rama Krishna Charana Sparasha Pramoda Manum Tunoti Sahago Ganayas Tanoyat Pani Yasuya Vasakandara Kandamole. He said that, alas, how fortunate is this hill, Govardhan, which supplies fruits, roots, and other paraphernalia for Krishna and his friends to eat, and also fresh spring water for Krishna to bathe in, to swim in, and for his cows to drink from, and whose waterfalls Krishna plays in, and whose caves Krishna plays in. We wish that we could take birth as one of those stones on Govardhan. So this is the nature of spiritual love, is that the associate of the Lord or the pure devotee always thinks that everybody's better than me. All the other devotees of Krishna are much more higher, and I'm so unfortunate that I have no love. The qualities for chanting these songs purely and for entering into that status of pure love and becoming an associate of God is just that. Trinadapi sunichena turodapi sahishnana amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Thinking oneself lower than a straw in the street, more tolerant than the tree. Even though the woodcutters come and chop the tree, or two lovers come and they, with a big knife, they scrape a heart into the tree, Janie and Joey forever. And they rip flowers off the tree without any consideration of delicacy. No matter who comes to the tree for what, the tree never asks anybody for water, even if it's very thirsty. And it always gives its shade, its fruits, leaves, and everything to others without desiring anything back. So this is the qualification for becoming a pure devotee, and this is the qualifications that the pure devotees have. Then, the last verse of this song, these 20 verses of this song called Venugit, the song of Krishna's flute, the narrator of this scripture, he says, Evam vidha bhagavato ya vrindavana charina varnayanto mato gopya kridas tanmayatam yayu. Very beautiful. By continuously discussing those pastimes amongst themselves, the gopis enter a state of ecstatic trance in meditation upon Sri Krishna. Thus they become one with his pastimes, which continuously manifest within the heart. So we hear in so many spiritual circles that, you know, we want to meditate and become one with God. This is the actual meaning of that. God is a person and we're persons. Just like you can say that a green parrot merges into a green tree because it flies into the tree and then you don't see it anymore. But it hasn't lost its identity. It's just flown into the tree and now it's enjoying in the tree. So real oneness with God or real merging with God means to merge into his pastimes and actually becoming a playmate of God himself. And then by loving God and experiencing God's love, then automatically one loves every living entity, including the insects and the trees and, what to speak of, humans. There's no consideration of, I like this person, I don't like this person, or this person likes me and that person doesn't like me. And then I think for hours and hours about how that person doesn't like me and I have to get back at them and all those kind of things. So our spiritual master Srila Prabhupada says that one has to learn where to repose oneself, repose one's love in such a place that everybody can be happy by reposing our love in one place. So now I'll ask if there's any questions or comments. I hope this class wasn't too much of a shock for those who are hearing these kind of things for the first time. Yeah. Are there any questions or comments?
I have a question.
Okay.
If we somehow manage to manifest some kind of love for God, does that have an effect on God?
What do you mean by an effect on him?
How does it affect Krishna?
How does love affect God?
Okay, I'll give you an example from something I heard from Srila Prabhupada when I was at a engagement with him, a public engagement. at the Arlington Street Church in Boston. He said, suppose I was giving this lecture here, and none of you were here, and I'm just speaking to the four walls. There's not happiness there, but because all of you are here, there's so much happiness in the exchange. Why does a man create children? And he goes through so much trouble. He has to work so many hours and in all kinds of conditions. And he has to call the doctors when the kids are sick. And he has to worry about their health. And so many hardships of sending them to school. And what to do if the kid doesn't like the school. So why does he do all this? He does it so that when he comes home in the evening from a hard day's work, the children run up to him, jump into his arms and say, Daddy! And they both embrace each other. And the father and the son feel so much pleasure. So God is the embodiment of bliss. Eko Bohushama. He's one and he became many just to share that bliss and experience the bliss of that relationship. So he also experiences unlimited joy in that relationship with us. Although we're insignificant in size, we're all atomic. Like even this whole planet Earth is atomic in the universe, and this universe is atomic in the scheme of things of all the universes. But just like even if a very tiny, little insignificant part of my toe got a splinter in it, immediately all my attention goes there. So even though we're very tiny, when we have a relationship with him and that relationship is realized, then he gives all of his energy to us in loving, ecstatic exchange. And because he's absolute, he still remains complete to give himself completely to another pure devotee. So he gives himself fully to each one. You know that verse, what it says? Om Purnamada Purnamidam. The absolute truth is complete and perfect. And because he's completely perfect, even though so many complete units emanate from him, just like this phenomenal world, which are completely equipped in and of themselves, like we don't have to import something from another universe or another planet, still he remains the complete balance. So although he's having all these ecstatic loving exchanges, when someone becomes his pure devotee, he still gives himself fully to that devotee. The maidservants of Srimati Radhika, when Krishna looks at them, he practically faints because they're made of service. And because of their pure service, they're almost as beautiful as Radharani. So he almost faints when he sees them. And he bows down to them if Radharani doesn't want to see him to create more eagerness in him. He bows down to them and begs them to please bring him to her, if they are the guards. Any other questions or comments? Do you look for any questions or comments?
I was going to just ask one thing. You were saying how we should all come to see Srila Gurudev because it's so rare. But there's so many spiritual masters in the world.
Yeah.
So,
how do you know?
Well, I mean, there's so many.
Who's the right one?
So, yeah, I mean,
there's Amici and so many other famous Indian export.
I mean, if I wanted to, I could probably.
So, what makes it rare?
Yeah, I could probably hear some guru every week.
That's a good question. In the Vedas it says, Tasmad Guru Prabhadyeta Jigyasu Sreya Uttamam. That is, one who's actually serious to inquire about his ultimate goal of life, Shreyas. Jigyasu Sreya Uttamam. Sreya Uttamam means his highest benefit. Just like there's a baby, and the baby is crawling along, and he sees a ball of dust. And he thinks, wow, cotton candy. So he eats it, and oh, it didn't turn out to be for his benefit at all. That's called prayas. Anticipated happiness, but it turns out to be bad in the long run. Or he sees this shiny thing that looks like a V, and it's really shiny and straight. He thinks, oh, how glittery. I would love to chew this glittery thing, which turns out to be an open safety pin. So it's like a moment of anticipated happiness. And then, you know, I don't have to explain what's going to happen to him. So that's called prayas, temporary false happiness. We are guided by providence to a spiritual master who wants to fulfill our prayas, if that's our deep inner mood. But those who have jigyasu sreya uttama, who really in their hearts want to inquire about their ultimate benefit of life, that spiritual master is very, very rare. And what are the qualifications of that spiritual master? Tasmad guru prabhadyeta jigyasu sreya uttama shabde pare chanisnatyam. He's in full knowledge of all the revealed scriptures. And not only is he in full knowledge and can answer any question to relieve anyone's doubts, not only like I can answer a lot of doubts and I can intellectually make you stop a doubt, but the real heart's or soul's doubt in the existence of God and my relationship with him, he can eradicate. That pure devotee can eradicate. I can eradicate a few intellectual doubts, but he can eradicate the soul's doubt that am I this body or not? Am I soul or not? Do I have a relationship with God or not? Is Krishna God or not? He can eradicate those doubts. Because when he speaks, there's three kinds of speakers. One is just a speaker who knows the words, like I myself. I don't even know all the words, but whatever words I know, it's only words. And then there's a speaker who gives a shadow of a reality. Such a person is himself, he's experiencing the beginning of some ecstatic symptoms of devotion, but he hasn't actually fully seen God face to face at any moment. Maybe he gets like glimpses. So he can give a shadow of reality when he speaks. And then there's the pure self-realized soul who's situated in the reality, who's right there in the painting, who can, with every word, he impresses the reality. The love of God atoms that are in his heart, in his body, come out from his body and go onto you when you're sitting there in the room, even if he doesn't say anything. Or just by his glance, you can feel the love atoms coming onto your own body. So he knows everything of all the revealed scriptures. He has realized the conclusions of all the scriptures. Plus, not only that, he's detached. He has no material desires and no material anxieties. Because he's experiencing the unlimited happiness of that realm. I was just explaining that whole picture for what each detail is. You can read about it in this book at any time. Or if you have the Krishna book, Prabhupada's Krishna book.
Yes.
Chapter 21.
21, okay.
Is that whole painting. Wow. So he's completely detailed. We're just giving now the qualifications of a bona fide spiritual master. And he's completely detached from matter. If you give him $1 million, it doesn't affect him. And if you take everything from him, it doesn't matter. Because he's experiencing the higher pleasure of Krishna's association. So for a self-realized soul, he sees a pebble, a stone, and a gold as the same. He sees friends and enemies as the same. He loves everyone, no matter how they feel about him. So that caliber of spiritual master is very rare. Yes, Prabhu?
So does it take a lifetime to seek out a spiritual master, for instance, like Gurudev? Like, you know, I had gone to India with friends, and I had met many spiritual masters, and I remember once I was in Delhi, and there was a guru speaking to thousands of people, and Westerners were still important because we could sit up in front.
And I was introduced, and the guru said, what can I do for you? And I said, I don't know. He just said, well, go have some food and enjoy the ashram. So how is it, does it take millions of lifetimes to say, I will give myself and look for a guru? Because look, we're in the West. We're not privy to gurus. I mean, there's a few that come and go. So how is it that one is so special to be able to, like yourself, to meet Prabhupada, or for me to meet Gurudev? How has that come about? Is it all arranged? It's not by chance. Because we live in the West. We don't have the fortune.
That's a good question. So I think the answer is given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. He says, Brahmanda Bhomite Konya Bhagyavana Jeev Guru Krishna Prashade Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. That is, there are innumerable living entities in innumerable species of life. There are 8,400,000 species of life. Insects, birds, aquatics, reptiles, animals, humans, plants, and the soul, what's happening is the soul is transmigrating through all these various species of life according to his activities. I'm going to be very, very simplistic now. If you like to sleep a lot, you'll become a bear. If you like to eat flesh, meat, juicy, bloody red meat, then you become a tiger. So the soul, according to his past activities, is wandering through the various species of life through many, many universes. There's not only one universe, according to the Vedas, but innumerable universes. So the living entities, since the beginning of time, that's many, many millions and billions of years, has been wandering. Don't you feel tired? Has been wandering through the various universes. Now, one who's very fortunate gets to meet a bona fide spiritual master. Now, how does this come about? Very good question. Bhaktistu Bhagavata Bhakti Sangena Parijayate Satsanga Labhyate Punbir Sukritai Purvasanchitai. That is, after performing in these various species of life, many millions of spiritual pious activities, either knowingly or unknowingly, for many millions of births, then one gets the association of a pure devotee. Then by the association and under the guidance of that pure devotee, one gets pure devotion to Krishna. So, what are some examples of spiritual, unknowing, pious activities? Okay? I'll give a few. One is, there was a man who loved a prostitute. And he gave all of his money to this prostitute. Time and time again. He begged, borrowed, and stole just to get that money for her. Now when he was completely finished, no more money, no more means to get money, she just ditched him. And what's the use of him anymore? So he felt so bad, he felt like killing himself. But it's not so easy to kill yourself because we're so attached to the body. So he couldn't kill himself. But he just couldn't eat, he couldn't sleep, he was just roaming about. Did you ever lose a lover? You just roam about in a state of shock, and you're oblivious to your surroundings. So he just, in his oblivion, he went into the woods, and he saw this old broken down temple. So that night he took shelter in the corner of one of these temples. He didn't know what it was, it was just a broken down building to him. And he fasted throughout the night. So after he left, the prostitute realized, oh, what did I do? He loved me so much, and I just kicked him out. And she felt so bad, she also began weeping. She also began wandering around. By the will of Providence, she ended up in these same woods, in the same broken-down building, in a different corner, and they didn't see each other. And they both fasted throughout the night. And then the next morning, they met, and then they got together again. So the interesting thing about this particular day, it was a spiritual holy day called Nisringa Chaturdasi, the appearance day of one of the incarnations of Krishna. And one of the spiritual regulations is to fast throughout the day and night. And by the will of Providence, it turned out that this building, broken down building, was a temple of Lord Nrsingadev. So in their next lives, this man and woman became Prahlad Maharaj and his wife. Prahlad Maharaj is a pure devotee of Krishna, and his father was an atheist, and his father was a very powerful king. And because his son was a devotee of the person he hated, God, he kept trying to kill his son. He threw him off a cliff, threw him into a pot of boiling oil, he threw him into a fire, at the foot of an elephant, into a blizzard. But his son, Prahlad, kept just remembering Krishna, and Krishna kept saving him, and he wasn't in the slightest bit affected. So this is an example of something he did in the past that got him that connection now, that it was unknown pious activity. Another example of another, not even human, a bird. A bird was standing in front of a temple. Of course, he didn't know it was a temple. And he was shot in the chest by a hunter. So just imagine being shot in the chest. He started reeling and reeling and walking, you know, outside of his control. And in his reeling and walking and wandering, he circumambulated that temple. And it's one of the devotional activities, because the deities, like the statues of God, who are not statues, but God himself in the form of statues, are in the temple, and one of the services is to go around the temple. So he did that. In his next life, he took birth in the family of devotees. Another one is a rat who was in a temple, climbing on the altar, and the candle, the ghee wick, burning clarified butter that he was using as a candle, and that was just about to go out. So he started drinking the ghee, and his nose caught fire and became like a candle. So in his next life, he was born in the family of ordinary devotees, and then he got the opportunity to meet a pure devotee. These are just some simple examples. And then many, many lives of those kind of things, and many human births. Like suppose somebody is going to India because they're an exporter, an importer, and they go to India just like, see, what's your name? Apollonia. Apollonia has this shirt. Maybe it was made in India. Maybe it was imported. It looks Indian. So, or this, what's your name?
Dimitri
looks like she's wearing an Indian dress. I don't know if it is. Is it?
Yeah.
So these dresses are imported from India. So somebody goes to India because they know people in the West, especially in Ojai, they're really spiritual and they love Indian clothes. So they go to India, they get the thing for like, you know, $1 and they sell it for $100. So they're in Vrindavan buying the clothes, and then they see, then all of a sudden, there's some devotees singing. And even the pure devotee is walking down with his party of singers singing. So they're in the midst of buying the clothes wholesale, but they're hearing the chanting. So they get some impressions in their heart. So life after life, for millions of lives, these impressions mount up. And gradually it becomes so strong, the impressions on the heart, that the inquiry comes, this inquiry about, who am I anyway? What am I doing here? Why do I have to suffer? Is there a God? If there is, how can I meet him? Is there a guide to God? And then Krishna arranges that he gets a bona fide spiritual master. Okay?
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
My comment is that today I was like really feeling kind of empty inside, and Jay happened to walk down the street and said, you know, want to come with me? And I've never been anywhere with Jay before.
And, he's a friend of yours?
He's my neighbor.
Oh.
But she said she's never been anywhere with him before.
No, I've never been anywhere with Jay before. And
they just like said hello to each other, you mean?
No, he's my neighbor. But
your neighbor.
They never went down the street.
Don't do
but he saw
together.
Us on Harinam.
Yeah, he's
and
somebody
he's
that I've never been out with before.
I mean, he just
yeah.
like, you he's were just like friends, but or
yeah.
neighbors, but
you never gone
never.
Out.
Yeah. He just happened to walk down the street.
Wow,
and said,
we.
You know,
isn't that amazing?
I'm going to it's like an Indian thing, and they're going to do some devotee kind of phrases, something to that effect. And I was feeling, you know, this kind of void where God was concerned. I usually feel pretty close, but sometimes I get this really kind of distant thing going on. I know it's all psychological stuff, but it was on me pretty heavy. And I thought, well, okay, I think I need that. And we came over here, and I can just say, I don't do phonics well. Something kind of
what's
happened.
Phonics?
It's like to know the sounds of those letters in Sanskrit. So I can't really read that very well, especially when you're singing and it's like, oh, it goes that way with me. But I could feel the vibration and the sincereness, everyone here. And I can only say it really touched me and helped me a great deal.
That's great. So she's an example of that after many, many lives.
And I'll give you one example. Now, when the devotees, my wife, during the devotion of Krishna Kamani, but when the devotees leave, they're a direct a particle bringing energy of Gurudev. The house here takes on a shine and a feeling. And there'll be an emptiness.
No, the shine comes from you,
Prabhu. No, there'll be, you'll feel just if you, you'll have a nice feeling to come again here. But it's like whenever I get together, we'll go to India and you're with Gurudev and the devotees. There's it's like in the spiritual world. We do have that separation. And that's why we have the sadhusanga. We have association. You know, of course, I'm lucky I have nine women. But you wouldn't know them. I mean, they're quiet to do their own thing. And, you know, but so that's what you'll feel a little bit for a while.
And life is hard. You know, I mean, life is not easy, the journey that we're on. And so there's stumbling blocks along the way, even when we're trying to be upbeat and everything. So that's why it's like, you know, like you did tonight, you didn't let your mind, you just said, yeah, let me go. You know, it's like we have to take these opportunities because they are in between the other stuff. And these opportunities, you know, Krishna's in our heart and he guides us. And the opportunities enrich us so much and they make it all, you know, so that...
Go on.
Yeah. Yeah. And the more we desire, the more these opportunities will arise.
And it's also, it's interesting because people that don't know about Krishna consciousness, look how much discussion we had over one important pain. I won't belittle it because it's a pastime. People don't know about, you know, Krishna, that they're, this is just... an atom worth of all the lore, the paintings, the stories, the literature, the Bhagavatam, all the literature there is. I mean, it would take lifetimes and lifetimes to absorb just small amounts of it. People think, oh, well, they're devotees. They sell books.
Or they just say Hare Krishna.
And that's what they don't understand. And maybe that's probably true of me with other religions, too. Maybe other, you know, I have to appreciate and learn that, too. Maybe they have more and more depth. So there's so much to being a devotee. Mm-hmm. But that'll be another subject.
Any other? Oh, okay.
And we offer always in gatherings like this, certain men should offer, always offer to Krishna first. And then
we offer this ceremony is called Arti. We offer devotional items to the Lord and whatever food preparations we make. And then some people say, well, how can God eat? Well, in the scriptures, he says, I eat. But he doesn't eat like us. He can eat with any part of his body, Angani Yasya Sakalendriya Vitri Mantri. All of his senses can act for any other sense. So by hearing the mantras, hearing the song of offering, he can eat with his ears. If we offer the foodstuffs to his lotus feet, he can eat through his feet. And of course, he eats from his mouth. So he eats everything, and then he spiritualizes it because it enters his body. He chews it, and the same nectar that comes out of his mouth to play the flute that enchants all living entities is the same nectar in his mouth that chews that food. So when it comes back and manifests here, We don't see anything disappear and reappear, but it's disappearing and reappearing. Or you could say transforming. Then that ordinary foodstuff becomes mixed with the nectar from the Lord's lotus mouth, and which comes from his heart. And then it's called prasadam, or mercy. And our spiritual master Srila Prabhupada said, even an atheist can taste the difference between an unoffered foodstuff and an offered one. And then just by eating that, we don't say eating, we say honoring, because that foodstuff being in the Lord's mouth and body also has the qualities of God. It becomes like a manifestation of God. So we say we honor the prasadam, and we eat with the consciousness that it's non-different from the Lord and his gift to us. And just by eating it, then we get spiritual advancement. So that's part of the spiritual process. Chanting, dancing, feasting, and philosophizing.
I just wanted to say, these paintings, we have prints of them available in the room over here, if anyone would like this one here. We're going to have Nathan?
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to have an art ceremony, and then we're going to have a
and again, like you said, it doesn't matter if you're